My next guests are Sean McCarthy and Max Davis, who are the bass and banjo players for The Ghost of Paul Revere, a non-traditional folk band that has won multiple awards, including Best in Maine, at the 2014 New England Music Awards. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
So you guys are pretty great. I really enjoy your music.
Thank you.
Like, there's a little bit of a star-struckedness, I think, because I recently saw you play at the Kenny Bungport Festival, and you're very talented. Actually, Spencer Albee, who also played at the Kenny Bungport Festival, I consider equally talented. So, like, the whole room right now is just filled with talented musicians.
Pretty good company.
Yeah. You're from Buxton.
Max is from Buxton. I'm actually from Hollis. I'm on the other side of the river.
Oh, okay. All
but
right.
It used to be a part of Buxton, so that still counts, I think.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So tell me how you got to know each other.
Just growing up.
Yeah.
I met Griffin first. He and I both had sisters that were 4 years older than us. And they kind of met at school. And then Griffin and I were just, you know, whenever the girls were over at each other's house, we were kind of with each other. And then just became fast friends. And then Griffin had met Sean a little bit before I had. But it all just kind of connected. And then we were running around in the backyards before we knew it.
Good old preschool days.
So you've really known each other a long time.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep. 26 out of the 29 years so far.
Wow, crazy.
Yeah.
And you still like each other.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, Griffin's not here today, so he can't really speak to this one way or another, but...
That's true.
Right, I guess we could really let it all out right now.
Yeah.
If we wanted to.
So if one lives in Buxton or Hollis, where does one go to high school, for example?
Bonnie Eagle. Graduated 06. We had a good time out there. I think it kind of had a little bit of a rural reputation, but we have fun.
Yeah. No, it was a good school. I mean, it's funny because it's so spread out. I think it's four different towns in the area that all come to Bonnie Eagle. So it's interesting because up until high school, you still haven't met like half of the people that you're going to be graduating school with, which makes for an interesting dynamic because I made some really great friends kind of in the later high school years, but also had this really strong staple crew that we grew up with in elementary school. And it was unlike a lot of people that we've talked to. We kind of had a very strong core group of friends that stayed together forever and haven't really been able to shake them, and now we're all kind of living in Portland again, so it's kind of funny. Can't really get away from each other.
Yeah. We're stuck.
How about the music? Does Bonnie Eagle have a particularly strong music program, or how did you all the three of you get involved with this?
There was a period of time, I think it was before we came through the school, that Bonnie Eagle had a really great band teacher. I think his name was Chris Humphreys, and a really kind of prolific drama teacher as well. So there was definitely some artsy stuff happening there, but when we came through, it slowed down a little bit. Football was kind of the king then. But I think it was just the love of music in general that we had. We used to listen to music all the time, going on car trips and field trips and stuff like that with our parents. And it was all sorts of different stuff. And I think that specifically our parents and the teachers who we had a real kind of connection with kind of fostered that sense of you don't have to go on the football team if you don't want, like, play guitar, join drama club.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was thinking of when you were saying that is we had just a lot of teachers and kind of like drama kind of teachers or educators from a young age up that just we all kind of had a natural creative bend, and they all really wanted to push any kind of creativity that they could, and we kind of fell in love with that aspect of education, and they fostered it in a big way. So we had a lot of really strong teachers that just kind of said, you know, do whatever you want, especially if it's creative, because we'll try and help you as much as possible, which always seemed like the goal. So it was always kind of fun because you could excel in that way.
I think the actual physical location too helped a lot. Like a lot of places in Maine, there's a lot of inspiring stuff in just the countryside, and just growing up in that kind of semi-rural area where you're close enough to see what you're missing out on a lot of the nights, but you're kind of content with where you're at. And I think that that had a lot of influence on it too. Just what we ended up playing and how we end up playing it.
Tell me more about that. I mean, how does being content with where you are lend itself to a musical style?
I think it's just kind of, I wish I could remember. We've got a good friend, Ben Cosgrove, who actually writes music based on the landscapes that he's experiencing at the time. And he has a certain term for it, I can't remember. But it's just, I think, trying to, you feel the energy of the place, and it's just, it's not necessary to find an outlet for it, but it definitely, you want to bring that sense of roots and where you're from to other people when you're trying to express what you're trying to express, because it gives them a little more of a feel of who you are.
Yeah, kind of along the lines of what you were saying. I also felt like you were saying how we were about a half an hour from Portland, and you know, our parents were definitely all active in the community, either theater or kind of going to see shows, and you know, coming to see the movies at where the movies used to be here in Portland. But it was always kind of like a special occasion or like a maybe once a weekend kind of trip. The rest of the time, you know, we had everything that we kind of needed at home and records. And it's kind of funny to come back older and kind of readdress where our influences came from, because, you know, we were all listening to similar things in our households, like the Beatles and like Bob Dylan. But we also had much, much more diverse kind of different little pockets within each household. Like Sean had way more Bruce Springsteen when he was growing up. Griffin had a little bit more, probably Led Zeppelin, I'd probably say.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's kind of funny to come back and to see what was getting swapped around between us kind of subconsciously to kind of, you know, get excited by something else that maybe we didn't have access to. And I don't know, we never really planned on playing music, but I think all of those things definitely lended itself to where we were drawing from and how we were all kind of attracted to similar sounds that were kind of across the board.
So what would you say was in your household?
A lot of the Beatles, a lot of Bob Dylan. My mom's a huge Rolling Stones fan, so we had a lot of Rolling Stones. Kind of everything. My dad was also a jazz guy, so he had, you know, a lot of different jazz records on a lot of times that I didn't, like, they were there and I was listening to them, but never really was asking about it till later. But yeah, kind of all over the board. I think the things that I really held on to were probably the Beatles and Bob Dylan from those earlier times. The things that I really remember getting stuck with me.
It's funny, you can remember each parent had like two or three go-tos musically that they go for.
Right.
Like, I know definitely, I remember in middle school we worked on a project for chorus together, and it was, we went to your house and it was up between the Beatles' Good Morning or it was the Beatles' Long and Winding Road, I think. And then we'd go over to Griffin's house and his dad would want to listen to Ani DiFranco and Griffin would want to listen to Black Sabbath. And then at my house, it was Stevie Ray Vaughan and Bruce Springsteen on my dad's side, and Mom was pretty much all classical, some show tunes. It was fun. I think that's why it worked so well, because we got to experience growing up what we were brought up with, and we kind of integrated the other families. Like, I learned about the Beatles from Max's family, and I learned about Led Zeppelin from Griffin, and it just kind of culminated into this.
Tell me about the first time that you came together as a trio and actually sang and played music.
Oh, that's high school.
Yep.
And we don't really talk about it a lot, because it was definitely done to get attraction from girls. It was probably the primary reason.
Yep.
In high school.
So you don't talk about it because you're embarrassed, or
no? It was definitely different at the time, for sure. It was funny. We were talking. We actually played a Guster song for one of our first big shows. We were asked to play our high school graduation, which is probably still one of the biggest crowds we've ever played to.
I think so.
Very kind of silly, like two acoustic guitars, bongos, but still working on the three-part harmony then, which was definitely the exciting part.
I think our first show was the senior year Christmas assembly.
Oh, that's right.
Where we played the General from Dispatch. Classic.
Which is hard because we were just talking about all of our really stronger inspirations, and
yeah,
we went for that one as a cover.
Yeah.
So how did that decision get made?
I think we were just able to sing it and figured it would go well.
Yeah. And
in the current
That was kind of the cool thing back then. Back then, Jesus, it was only 10 years ago. last years in high school, it was like Dave Matthews Band and Dispatch and Guster, that type of acoustic rock was coming up. And it was fun.
Yeah, and it was popularizing the kind of acoustic guitars role back in a little bit more of the singer-songwriter kind of phase that started to come up, and the popularity that came back for that. Because everything had gone really big sound, I feel like, recording-wise and electric-wise. And for our generation, it felt like at that point, like, as much as it's hard to really like Dave Matthews, he was really kind of paving another door open into that kind of music. It definitely just, it made you start to like other types of music in that. And I think we kind of fell in love with it. We liked hearing where the sound was coming from. We liked seeing the physical playing of an instrument and how that was translating, and kind of like without any kind of amplification, which was always kind of interesting for us. Because I mean, we liked to have campfires and play around campfires, and it also worked well because we could record in my dad's bathroom when he was sleeping, so it wouldn't be too loud. So it's like
it had
its reasons, I think.
Yeah.
So wait, your dad's bathroom had particularly good acoustics as opposed to Sean's dad's bathroom.
I don't know. I think maybe we would just...
I'm not sure if we tried to fit in my bathroom.
Yeah, we didn't do too much sound research into the different bathrooms.
No.
I think it was just one of the late nights that we were there.
Yeah, we were just kind of figuring it out as we went along, and we had I'm not sure about the other guys, but no real aspirations to become a musician for a job. Like, that was not a realistic expectation. So we just have fun, there's something to do. And like Max was saying, we're creative people, so we like to have projects and figure stuff out on our own and stuff. But I guess it actually worked out to our advantage in the end.
Yeah, for sure.
So what did you aspire to be, or what did you think your path was going to look like?
Oh, Lord. I thought that by now I would have probably children and a wife and a mortgage, and I kind of switched back and forth in high school whether I wanted to do culinary arts or if I wanted to act or if I wanted to be a teacher, and being a teacher seemed to provide the most stable lifestyle, so I went for that, and then found all about standardized testing and whatnot, and wasn't that thrilled, so changed my mind pretty hard and quickly at that point. And then I know Griffin and Max, they both went to art school.
Yeah, Griffin and I went to a small art school out in Western New York, and kind of accidentally both decided we were going to go. We both knew we were going to apply, and both knew that each other had gotten in, but we had a couple other schools up on our lists. And, you know, I remember the day when he was like, "Where are you going? Where'd you choose for school?" And I was like, "Alfred." He was like, "No way. I just sent my confirmation too." So it was really kind of funny because we joke about not being able to shake each other, but that going right out of high school into college with a guy that you've known since you were two is kind of a crazy situation. So, but it was actually kind of wonderful at school. We had different roommates, and that kind of brought two different groups of from different dorms together, and it kind of created a really cool community. And he and I played a little bit of music in school, but I thought I was going to be a painter, a fine artist. But yeah, no, it
then
it was it just it, we got back here and it, everyone was kind of starting to pursue different things, but everyone was kind of moving back into Portland after college and traveling. And we got back, and just to see everybody, we used to go out, and Griffin was doing kind of like a open mic night thing at Dogfish. He had a kind of like a one night a month showcase where he'd have to play for like 3 hours, and in order to fill material, he'd bring a bunch of different people up. And so we had just moved back and just kind of turned 21, so a lot of our friends were coming out. He'd offer us a free beer if we came up and sang with him, so it was a sweet kind of situation. We were all kind of working on different things at the time, but it really just started to snowball, and it seemed like every month the show kept on getting bigger, and I don't know, our sound was starting to kind of congeal and kind of move into something that was really kind of interesting. And so then it just seemed like it was impossible to fight, so we all kind of just sunk our teeth in at that point and met some really great people and got a show outside the Dogfish, and then it kind of just kept on going. So
how would you describe your sound for people who haven't heard it before?
It's a combination of bluegrass, folk, Americana, and singer-songwriter-esque. It's really hinged on a three-part harmony. And we have kind of three different, pretty dynamically different voices. There's a banjo, acoustic guitar, acoustic bass. So we have this, it's not rigid bluegrass, it's not very strongly technical, but it has bluegrass instrumentation. And it draws a lot from that kind of bluegrass kind of school of thought, and very kind of succinct. We're definitely songwriters. We like to have a start, beginning, middle, and end. We're not really into the more kind of jam style. Everything's kind of written out to a certain extent with room for improvisation, but it also draws from, you know, the roots that we were talking about, from being inspired from young kind of children, like the Beatles or like the Rolling Stones or like Led Zeppelin, that, you know, whatever we want to hear dynamically sound-wise, we have to figure out how to make it with that instrumentation. And so whatever happens in that is kind of what our sound is, I guess. I don't know if that helps anybody really kind of hear it in their heads, but...
Well, it's easy enough for people to find you and listen.
Yeah.
Decide for themselves.
Sure.
Why the Ghosts of Paul Revere?
Ooh, that's why we wish Griffin was here.
Yeah.
You'll
said,
have to channel him and help us understand.
There's no proof, no notarized proof, but he said he had a dream where the ghost of Paul Revere came to him, or he just had like that phrase, when he woke up, he had that phrase stuck in his head. So when he used to go out and play solo, he called himself Griffin Cherry and the Ghost of Paul Revere to try and explain that type of feeling. When you're on stage performing, you kind of turn into somebody else a little bit and do things you might not be comfortable with or you'd be embarrassed about if you weren't performing. And then when we joined up, we liked the idea of that. I think pretty specifically, we liked the idea of that being not possessed, but just kind of moved by what was happening at the moment, so you felt different than who you were. So we just kind of picked up that portion of it and became Ghost of Paul Revere.
One of the things that I've been impressed by is that you can work well within this community, the main community of musicians, but you also have translated outside of the main community. Why do you think that is?
Honesty. I think we try to convey a lot of honesty in the music, and I think that's why we're drawn to that type of folk and bluegrass originally, because it's really kind of bared down to the acoustics. The songwriting may not be the most intense in those cases or verbose, but it's they say a lot with just repeating the same thing over three chords.
Yeah, I think the honesty and kind of just the sense of community that we got here, mm-hmm. where it was, we were given a lot of really strong support at a young kind of like baby band age here in town from older bands like Dark Hollow Bottling Company that helped us out with our first show, and Travis Sear, who helped also to just kind of, who believed in what we were doing almost as much as they believed what they were doing. And that kind of feeling in the community is really supportive. It's really, I mean, it makes you feel like maybe you have something that's really working. And so we've tried to foster that everywhere we go with other musicians, whether they're at a stage kind of higher above us or haven't really worked up to the kind of touring level where we're at right now, or, you know, it just seems like to keep that community alive and to be excited about other bands and not to have a little bit of that competitive nature, but at the same time to not let it get in the way of friendships. And I mean, we've been so fortunate with friends that we've made from other bands. And sometimes it's hard. Sometimes you're really tired after shows, and it takes a lot to kind of reach out and to really make someone feel like you're excited to be in their company and to kind of have that kind of honesty. But I think when it does work out, I think you build some really, really strong relationships. And I think just transferring that from what we learned here into other communities around the country, we've started to develop similar pockets in other areas that are different, obviously, but it works, because then the next time you're in town, you have maybe a floor to crash on, or, you know, a friend of theirs has got a show that's opening up and they need an opener slot, or, but that worked out really well for us in the beginning, and it's continued to kind of work out with us, especially as we were starting to be support for the bigger bands, which is always nerve-wracking. It's hard to be, you know, make a good impression musically and, you know, really have a strong craft, but then at the same time be someone that those people want to hang out with, because they, I mean, at that point you're hanging out with so many people all the time. But we've been fortunate to build some of those relationships as well, and like the String Dusters and yeah. Jamestown Revival recently, which is just, it's a nice feeling when you can kind of build those.
Gotta have fun.
Right.
If you have fun on stage, then that translates to the people in the audience, and they see if the performer's having fun, they should be having fun, and then it's just kind of like a back and forth of fun. It makes people feel more comfortable and less like they like we're they have to keep us at arm's reach or right. something like that. It's not, we like to come off the stage and talk to people, and we have pretty awkward banter on stage sometimes because of that, but that's just because that's who we are, and we're letting other people see that, I think.
Right.
I think that's why it works.
It's not scripted.
No. Nope.
My son was talking to you during the Kennebunkport Festival, Sean, mm-hmm. and he was saying that he felt a little starstruck, because when they were driving back from Colorado, they were actually listening to your music in their car, driving yeah. cross country, and he's 23, he and his girlfriend. And you were talking about being starstruck, that you were meeting some of these bigger names, like maybe mm. James Taylor, I think was mm. the name. And that must be a really interesting place for you, that you're like, whoa, here's some of these influences that are actually alive and they're standing yeah. in front of us. What's that like?
Oh boy. It's a lot.
Yeah, yeah.
You see these people who are, because it's not only just like a personal idol or even somebody you admire and respect now, it's also somebody who's almost at the forefront of your industry as well. And going through what we've gone through to get at this point with the band, we realized how hard the work can be at times, and to actually have progress to the point that some of these people are at, it's very impressive. But then it's also just straight fanboy status.
Yeah.
Like some of the songs that they've written, like the moments that their music has carried you through in your life, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, we don't hide it very well a lot of times.
No.
when we played Newport Folk Festival, that was probably one of the worst ones, because they have such a big community, like VIP area, and you know they bring in a bunch of artists just in that area that aren't even playing that weekend, but might hop up on stage, and you know, just us being in there, kind of eating hummus and just looking around at all of these incredible musicians yeah. that you've either grown up listening to or within the last couple of years have become obsessed with, or it's really hard because you have to kind of shake that, because no one really, I mean, I'm always flattered when people say that, you know, we've had a really big impact on them, and but it's also, I don't know, I like having just, it's so hard, I always like to get past the kind of like normal small talk conversation to get into an actual conversation with that person, if possible. And it goes on both sides, whether it's someone else talking to me or if I'm reaching out to someone else, it's, I'd rather have get to the meat of a conversation quicker, I guess. But it's much easier said than done.
Yeah. If you don't know what to really start with, I think is a lot of the times with those people, they have the opportunity to go up and say hi and talk to them and say, well, technically whatever you want, I guess, but that actually just kind of bridging that 3 feet or making eye contact or sticking a hand out to shake, just because more often than not, I think it's just because you don't want to bother them because you know they might like their space, but also there's just the fear that once you go up and you start talking, you'll just ramble and ramble and on.
Yeah, horrified of what you might say.
Yeah.
I'm super nervous about it. We're going to be doing a mountain jam coming up next weekend. And the stage that we're playing on, in literally two sets after ours, this band Shovels and Rope, who have just been, since I found out about them, I've been obsessed with them. And I love, you know, they're a husband and wife duo and incredibly prolific, but write these incredible songs with a lot of energy, similar to the type of music that we try and make. And I've never seen them live before, but I've heard they're both incredible people, but they're playing two sets after us on the same stage, and I'm already nervous about kind of what I'm gonna say, because I'm gonna have to say something. I'm gonna have to at least say hi, but I'm afraid it might just bomb.
It's all right.
The Wayne's World thing.
Exactly.
Well, I very much appreciate your taking time out of your schedule. I know you guys were touring for a big part of the spring, actually.
Yeah.
And now you're kind of heading back out again, but a little more local.
Yeah. Yep.
So I know you've been pretty busy, and the fact that you and Spencer Albee were able to share a stage together during the County Bungport Festival was amazing. We're really lucky to have talented musicians in Maine, and I'm really glad that you guys came in and had this conversation with me today.
Likewise.
Thank you so much for having us.
We've been speaking with Sean McCarthy and Max Davis, who are two of the members of the Ghosts of Paul Revere. And you can see them out and about in Maine and also across the country, so make sure you check them out.